You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Balcone's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. This week, there's a great, phenomenal online community in bourbon, as many of you know. The Bourbon Junkies, Dan and Sean, I truly adore them more than I think they understand. They're just phenomenally great, and they've helped introduce me to other people like Will and Grease from the podcast. And Greasy Grease has made this prediction online that there's this ominous divisional shift happening in spirits, in which the secondary pricing, for those who don't know, there's a black market of whiskey online. If you need something, you can find anything you're looking for on Facebook. It's completely illegal. People do it anyways. And the pricing for these things have gotten so crazy and out of control that he feels like it's going to reach a point very soon in which liquor stores are going to have to give up or seriously question their ethics on whether or not they should just, instead of giving their crazy allocated bottle to a faithful customer, to just sell it online for much more money. I'll let him fully explain it, but that's the gist of it. And so ignore what I said until you hear his fully ignorant pitch on it. And then we'll go from there. But today, I invited them on the show. They're all incredibly great guys. You guys have seen Dan and Sean on the show a couple times. Grease and Will are incredible. The podcast is great. I love their dynamic. So I invite them on the show today to basically talk about this ominous prediction, whether or not it's something to be worried about, or is it something that we should just not think about. And we basically argue for an hour and a half. So if you love the podcast, if you love the Bourbon Junkies, and if you love the show, we get a chance to just kind of talk and give each other a hard time. I can honestly say that they are four of the best people in bourbon. So it was a great conversation. Let's jump into it. Let's pay the bills. If you're familiar with the concept of terroir and wine, you'll appreciate Mark Rainier's Waterford Single Malt Whiskey from Ireland. I've been drinking it on the show today. We start off the episode with Sagamore and their cognac. I'll talk about that in a second, and then we jump into Waterford, and I drank it the rest of the episode. I absolutely love the Irish single malt whiskey that they have. Mark is combining Scotch whiskey and fine wine talents to produce an authentic series of Irish single malt whiskeys based on traditional wine industry principles. 2021 Icons of Whiskey, Brand Innovator and Irish Distiller of the Year, San Francisco World Spirits Competition Double Gold, and I mean, literally, they're knocking out award after award after award. I cannot recommend Waterford enough. I thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy what Waterford and Mark Rainier is doing with Irish single malt whiskey. Definitely check it out. You can find it all over the U.S. glassrev.com/Waterford. They're doing everything as possibly fun as it could be when it comes to discovering what Irish whiskey is capable of. So big fan. This week's episode is brought to you in part by Sagamore Spirit Rye Whiskey. They are reviving the tradition of Maryland-style rye whiskey at their Baltimore farm and waterfront distillery. Each bottle of their whiskey is hand-blended for consistency and aroma, flavor, and texture, creating... I love what Sagamore is doing. And not only that, I convinced them to give me one of their oldest barrels in the warehouse that they've had that they just haven't done anything with, of their cognac-finished rye whiskey. They put, not just finished, the last like 4 years, something like that, our rye whiskey has spent in a cognac barrel at their distillery. I convinced them to give it to me. It's not just a single barrel pick, it's definitely a single barrel pick, but it's a 300 liter barrel and it's going statewide through Total Wine exclusively very soon. So anywhere in the state of Texas you find a Total Wine, you're going to find our Sagamore Rye Concept rye whiskey single barrel pick, all at cask strength, all unfiltered. You'll see my face, or not my face, but old Whiskey Pete's face on the side of the bottle. And I couldn't be more excited. I love the brand. I love what they're doing. And I'm excited to have a statewide release available. I mean, it's here now, but I don't think it's been put out to the stores yet. So any day now. All right. Without further ado, listen, I appreciate you guys giving me a week off for Thanksgiving. I took the family to Colorado, trying a few fun things in Colorado that they're famous for, and I'm back. So I will see you guys this week. I know Ian Somerhalder's coming back. They're going to be I can't talk about it yet, but Ian Somerhalder and their team are releasing their next version of Brothers Bond Bourbon, so they'll be back on the show soon. Yeah, we've got more in store. We'll see you soon, and without further ado, please welcome the Bourbon Junkies, Sean and Dan, Greasy Grease, and of course, Will from the podcast. First off, thank you, Bourbon Junkies, Sean and Dan. Thanks for coming, guys. Thanks for being
back. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us again.
It's always a blast.
We don't see each other very often, but I think of you guys very fondly as close friends.
Agreed.
Will and Grease. We'll see how it goes. Welcome to the show.
Listen,
thanks for having us.
If there was any better way to wonder if you're going to be friends with Grease and then you bring in this group for this topic, there's, by the end of this, there will be no podcast. We'll all be done talking to Grease for eternity.
I'm way ahead of you on that one.
And then, you know, we just go hang out with Will and Chris somewhere, you know? So,
yeah. Well, I for those who don't know what's going on, let's give a little audience catch up here. So I would say, and correct, I'm going to give some recap here. Grease, just feel free to correct me at any point if I'm wrong.
You don't want me correcting you. You want Will to correct it.
Okay. So
I don't know.
At some point in the last few months, there was a Facebook post using the phrase, there's a divisional shift coming in whiskey. And I thought to myself, okay, like what now? Like what more could the shit show of a hobby have coming? And like politics, I'm pretty moderate. I'm pretty middle of the road. I tend all the panic around, oh, if this person gets elected or if this thing happens, this is going to happen. I tend to always think you're being dramatic. Nothing's going to really change, but let's see where this goes. So on your show, the podcast, you two, Will and Grease, covered the topic, finally got into it for a good hour or so. Will playing the moderates and being, you know, very skeptical.
I was playing the logician in that.
The adult. Using logic. I think you mean you were playing the adult.
Yeah, that's fair.
And Grease made, you know, gave his case for what was going on. And I was so inspired. That's the wrong word. Angry. And I said, we should talk about this on the show. We should go into it. We should pick it apart. And at the very least, we get to have a few drinks and catch up and get to know two people that we've interacted on the Junkie Forum. I think of you fondly as well, even though I've light ribbing. But I think you guys are good guys. Let's get into it. So I'd like for Grease, that's his birth name, folks, to give your case from top to bottom, a general idea where this came from, the backstory. Let's jump into it.
You don't want, I think, Bill, you're better at concise. Like, if you want me to start at the beginning, it's not going to end well.
You can't give a TLDR on this. You've said this stupid idea eight times.
Not only that, hold on. Wait. Let me.
Hey, no, you want me to go?
Yeah, I do. But hold on one second. Before we jump into this, this is the first thing that made that pissed me off. Not only did you post it on Facebook, you would screenshot it and then make a new post with the screenshots.
Yeah, and then and share you it did on that stories.
In about 15 groups. and it did. I thought, what a boo. You look like maybe a boomer. I don't know how old you really are, but only my mom would screenshot instead of just making a new post. But go ahead. Let's hear it.
Well, no, it's easy to screenshot with the cool background on Facebook. So I screenshot that and I post it to freaking Instagram. That's just how you do it, bro.
Copying and pasting is so hard, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's struggle. Okay. However, I could cut corners. I cut corners, dadgum. It's called efficiency. Okay. And if you want to hear how people are cutting corners, let me go ahead and tell you about this divisional shit. I'm just kidding. It's not about cutting corners, or it might be. I don't even know. Listen, okay. I will first say after our show, and if people are listening and they're still freaking confused after I explain it, you can go to the show that it's like an hour and a half long. Knock yourself out. The one thing that I took after that episode was that it is very specific to non-control states that have limited number of stores, because the reason is because in Tennessee, store owners in Tennessee develop very big relationships because it's their only store for the most part. Now, if you've got a brother or if you've got someone you trust and you're able to have another branded store similarly, and it's the same, you can do that. Like our buddy Vrew, his brother just launched the second Barrels and Brews store in our area. And so they're brothers, and so they can do that. They get liquor licenses differently. It's a different liquor license per person, and you can only get one. You can reuse the brand. And so let me just say that in Tennessee, the relationship between people and or the relationship between consumers and retailers can be very, very tight, to the point of, like, oh my gosh, they're having a bad day. Like, I'm sending them a DoorDash gift card. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. Like no strings attached by any means in that regard. You know what I mean? So like, we're very close to a lot of people, especially around us here. We've got four or five retailers that we're very close to, and they're friends. I would say they're friends. And it was that struggle of knowing them as friends and knowing that they have a stance of they hate secondary to the point of we will never sell secondary. We hate secondary. I viewed that as a predicament that those stores would be put in if the percentage of growth of secondary that we've seen in the past year. If you fast forward 3 or 4 years and it has the same growth or exponentially even possibility more, you could see those stores being in a really rough spot as far as them backing off of their very public, very big stance of I hate secondary. And you might see them embrace secondary within their store because there's so much profit to be made.
Okay. So just to back up a little bit here. So Grease's prediction, a divisional shift within the hobby, is that up to this point, the general consensus with most mom and pops that are involved in the bourbon community, well known online, is to be anti-secondary, to not support it, to not be a part of it. And you're saying that the temptation will get to a point that it, because as we know, secondary, it's weird to me, I know I've got a little bit of a dog in this fight, but it's weird to me to see Prideful Goat batch one go for 250, a 15-year-old Kentucky bourbon, and then Elmer T. Lee go for 400. Makes me want to hit my kids. So sorry, was that too far? My wife.
I mean, that was. We'll edit that out. I feel like there's 500 other analogies you could have used.
No. Dinner better be warm. So the perception, this big profound argument, the whole reason for not one episode of the podcast, but now one episode of Whiskey Neat, is that you think that that shift is going to be, hey man, it's two, a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle. If a store gets it, it's hard to turn down $3,000, $5,000.
Well, that's what it is now. What I am saying is 3 to 5 years from now, if the percentage of growth continues to happen, now you've got a bottle of Pappy that could be worth $15,000. They got one. Never happened.
Okay. So
never happened, Sean.
So that'll never happen.
Do Sean thinks when he whispers, nobody can hear him.
No. Do you even live in the year 2021, Sean?
I also like the fact that this argument started as like a nationwide thing, and now you've whittled it down to the four stores in your county.
True.
Correct.
And that's it. That's where we're at. Okay. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, he goes, yeah, he started off with, now that I think about it, it's specific to control states, to the people that I know personally.
All right. Well, in Georgia too, in Georgia, you can have two stores. It's not
eight.
You can have.
Wait. So what is the? What is?
I can't know everybody, Sean. Personally,
What does it have to do with, like, what is having? What is being brothers and having two stores under the same brand? What is the relevance of that?
There wasn't relevance necessarily to that.
Okay.
I was explaining to you. It's very hard to have multiple stores. So the owners are very tied to their store, especially if they.
I hope so.
Well, not necessarily. A lot of people open businesses that aren't a part of it. They hire a manager and it doesn't matter. So, in the liquor industry, you have to hire someone very, very trustworthy, because there's a lot of stealing and fraud that can happen. Like, ask any retailer that. You have to have, if you step away from it as the owner, you have to have someone there that you value and trust, because it can get, you can lose money very quickly.
The divisional shift is just that store owners are just going to start charging secondary for whiskey,
or just participating in the secondary market.
Well, there's no reason for them to participate, because they can put it on secondary on their shelves legally and sell it.
Yeah.
No, here, let me, all right. So let me,
yes, that is what you were arguing.
That's pretty much it.
I've got one more point.
No, that's what you were arguing though. No, that's what you argued on our show multiple times on the internet. That's when they asked for, can you give the TLDR version? That's basically it distilled.
No pun intended.
These stores also have actually a big, it was. you will notice that there is a bigger cult following at stores when there's a relationship and when there's whiskey store picks, when it's whiskey involved.
Right.
Okay. So these store picks, how do you get rid of a barrel of Whistle Pig that costs $100 a bottle and you've got 200 bottles of it? How do you get rid of that? Right. That's a big liability.
You have to have
a good whiskey clientele, a good cult following, maybe a bourbon club, maybe something. Like, you've got to have something in place to move that barrel in a relationship form. Okay. How do you get those relationships? You get those relationships based on, hey man, like, occasionally throwing some bones. It doesn't have to be big bones. It could be an OWA. Hey, I'm not putting this out on the shelf, but you've bought 5 of my barrel picks recently, I've noticed.
Sure.
You want this available? The answer is yes. So you're looking at things like Weller 12, OWA, Full Proof, Van Winkle's, all this other stuff in a big capacity. You could see a dilemma coming. Is that bottle that I could sell for this amount, is it worth the, it, is that value higher than this guy that buys 5 of my picks a year?
But even your own analogy is wrong, because if you have your friends or your clientele that have the good relationship, if they're moving a barrel of Whistle Pig for you, your profit on a barrel is going to be significantly more than if you were to sell the sixer of OWA that you got.
Yeah.
At even your hypothetical, it doubles again in a few years and those bottles are $500 a pop. The math still doesn't work out for there to be this cataclysmic shift.
And I agree. However, those highly sought after barrels, the more expensive barrels too, in some cases.
Why does your hand look like a lobster claw?
That's how he was born. Don't make fun of him.
Yeah. So I'm glad I could get a word in edgewise here.
Oh,
so the thing that I want to talk about is, your argument, although I do get what you're saying, but the way that stores get those allocations is by moving through a tremendous amount of product. Now, I do realize that for Buffalo Trace, it's largely Wheatley vodka, and there's a lot of inducement happening.
Yeah, it's not single barrels.
Sure. However, the we, as you can see behind both you guys, I've been wanting to put up a shelf here, but I share this studio with the rest of ESPN in Houston, so I don't get to put up my collection, but a lot of us have more than just allocated items on the shelf behind us. We have more than we have standard shelf items. Everybody loves a good Russell's pick, you know, even if it's not a pick, a good off the shelf Russell's is pretty great. Those stores, they get those allocations through the bourbon groups, including OWA. And if you burn your audience and all of a sudden,
how do they get those through the bourbon groups?
Sorry, that may have been bad wording. What I mean is that through the support year round of bourbon groups and your loyal customers, then you get allocations. I don't just buy my expensive stuff from the local spot nearby. I buy my shelf stuff.
Yeah.
I buy my party stuff. And for the Whiskey Social, we buy about $65,000 in shelf items just for the event for one night. So if all of a sudden that store stops supporting me when I need the bottles I want for the event or for any other thing, for, you know, even if it's just for me, I'm going to stop supporting that store. And then that store is not going to get the allocations they want to be. It's a snake eating its own tail.
So let's use Russell's as an example. Okay. Which, number one, I would argue in 5 years, Russell's will be very hard to potentially get a single barrel of. Like, I do think store picks are,
it's currently hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It happened about 2 years ago.
Yeah. I'm saying even more so hard. Like, we've got a barrel of Russell's coming this year. It wasn't crazy hard.
Weird flex. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
No, weird, I'm just saying. Flex. No, it's not. I'm just saying it exists.
You have a full head of hair too. You want to?
It exists.
Make me feel real bad?
No, like, people don't scoff at it. Like, if you get that barrel, sure, you're like, oh, dude, that's awesome.
It's cool.
Yeah. It's not like, holy crap, how did you get that barrel?
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not there yet. I think it's going
to
be.
It's
holy
not like
crap.
All of us at single barrel select this morning trying to. I don't know, the Buffalo
I've done it every year for 5 freaking years. Or
no,
Grease,
years. You're going to do it in 2 years and then complain like, man, it was so hard to get those. I got in line. There were so many people.
Hey, guys, I have a prediction about Buffalo Trace products in the next 5 years. They're going to be hard to find. Like, it's I feel like your prediction is already happening. There's already stores that are tempted. And we've even had situations, we're talking maybe 3 or 4 years ago, completely different bourbon environment. I had a manager at Specs. There's about 200 stores in Specs in Texas of Specs currently all over the state. I knew of people that were managers at those Specs locations were basically giving a few select people a heads up as to when Weller 12 was dropping. And I knew a few people who would take the day off from work and just travel all over Houston and buy up all the Weller 12 they can so they can sell it for $150 a bottle on secondary. And someone, that manager, reached out to me and was like, hey man, do you want to split the profits? We can sell it on secondary. And so I took a screenshot of all of the locations that had the Weller 12 that he sent me, and I posted it in HVS and watched the world burn. I didn't out the guy, but it showed the manager screen. I was like, look, everyone in the group, it's fair to everybody. Now we all are we're all operating on equal playing field. If you're looking for Weller 12, go find it. And it ruined it basically for the people who were just essentially scalping. And this temptation from store owners and managers and liquor stores all over the country, everyone knows who Prav Saraf is, right? Prav, is that his name? Prav Saraf? It's always Prav, but he's based in DC. I forget his last name. But he's a liquor store owner. What you're predicting is already happening. So I don't really understand the divisional shift per se. I think what you're really saying is that in reality, more people will be tempted. Sure. But that's already happening. That's like saying, hey man, I predict in the next 5 years, the Houston Bourbon Society is going to be like 20,000 people. Well, yeah. Like, or the Junkies are going to be up over 100,000 subscribers in the next 6 months.
It's funny because Grease and I have talked about this on the phone before, and there's a store locally. I told Grease part of this story, but there's a store locally that had a back before COVID, before everything was like crazy, before secondary like went nuts, right?
Insane.
George C. Stagg used to be like $380 on secondary, right? Now it's like $800 or whatever it is. I don't know what it is, but it's a lot more, right? So there was a store locally that had a George C. Stagg for $500 on their shelf legally. And it was selling for $380, obviously illegally on secondary. And that one on their shelf for $500 still sold.
Yeah.
And they still got a Weller Foolproof single barrel from Buffalo Trace. They still get Pappies every year. They still get BTAC every year. Like, they still get allocations, and they just mark them for secondary, put them on their own shelves. And then they just move there because there's people who are going to go buy it on secondary anyways. Like, they don't care about that price tag. So if they can find it in store, then they can have it that day. There's no like fake bottles so much. Like, there's no worry there. Like, there's so much less risk for a store owner and a consumer to buy something at secondary pricing in a store, which people already do.
If you take away those single barrels that you just said that he got, okay, the Wellers, obviously, if a store that royally pisses you off sells a Weller barrel for MSRP or 10, 15% over MSRP, it's going to fly off the shelf. There's going to be no issue there.
No. They sold the Weller Foolproof barrel. They sold each bottle was 175 and it was like 250 on secondary at the time.
Right. It's under second. Yeah. It's probably going to sell because there's a secondary market level for it. Like,
there's a valuation that lets people know it's still worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Do you guys have bundling issues in your states?
There was one issues over in Grand Rapids. There was on the other side of the state recently.
What'd you say, Will?
I wouldn't say it's an issue here, but some stores will do bundles and sometimes it's two bourbon products. Like, it's not necessarily like having to buy the vodka or the tequila, like the low end shelfer that is going to help them. Sometimes it's two bourbon products. If they want to move something, a single barrel that's been on their shelf a while, they'll say, we got some OWA, but buy a store pick and you can get it. So I haven't seen it. I know some places have it where it's pretty extreme and it's like buy three of these and you get one or something. It typically has been pretty fair here, but that does go back to the very localized thing where it's not, we don't have a ton of the big box retailers or even a local chain that's moving things in a way that there's not that personal touch. It's very mom and pop here.
So I think the thing that bothered me most about the discussion is more about the discussion of morality around it. There was a time and place many years ago when the bourbon boom was happening, 15, 16, 2017, somewhere in there. Yeah. When stores first started bundling, it was like, what the fuck? I mean, how could you, it feels dirty. And when there's a local store named Sonny's that notoriously has always priced almost double secondary, and they've developed basically a trophy case of stuff that hasn't moved, but you know that when you're in a pinch and you need something and you've got the money, there's a place in town that has everything you're looking for at a crazy price. And it's a running joke here in Houston. But morally speaking, it's not necessarily unethical. There are people who are upset about
it's not unethical at all.
Loyalty points, right? And then I hear in the episode you did with Will, you guys talked a lot about it's not legal. And I'm like, who gives a fuck? Listen, legally speaking, raise your hand if you ever bought anything on secondary and had it shipped to your house.
Never happened once.
Yeah. Have you guys ever had anything shipped to your house, even not on secondary cost?
Definitely a friend not. What are you talking about? Dude? It's crazy you'd ask these questions right now.
So, I plead the fifth.
What's the statute of limitations in Michigan? All I'm saying is like this idea that it's ethical or unethical is nonsense. And a lot
But I don't have a liquor license that can be screwed.
I would push back a little bit on that as far as I agree with you in part about some of the area. No,
listen,
we
came into this discussion on the same side. I need you to stay there.
No. I'm saying I would say as far as the caveats I have about secondary and from the consumer side, the legalities and things, I know that you're saying, let's not get into that or whatever, but I do see local stories now of people getting caught selling things online. There was a guy in Nashville sold six of the Jack Daniels 10 years for actually not even that much markup, got caught doing it by the Tennessee ABC. Now he has a felony. Like, sure. I think I discourage it, not necessarily that I agree with the policy in that level, that the regulation side of it, but I do agree that since it is the law, I think it to be flippant about the secondary market as it's something everybody does. I see that, especially if Greese's prediction of 10 times the growth of the cost and things keep going, then those dollar numbers that then agencies, federal, local tax agencies could then start to bring the hammer down could ruin people's lives and what they thought was a fun hobby that everybody's doing, but they end up getting caught selling something for $10,000. They get a tax charge for unreported income. They get an ABC felony for trafficking in a high dollar amount.
It's not worth that, it to that the
starts
government
to
right
get
now.
Different. But right.
I have talked to very high people at very big distilleries.
Oh and my
what,
God.
And what they, no, I'm just saying people that know.
It sounds so Trumpy. Oh like just, my God. I've talked to the biggest folks.
I'm not going to name names.
So big, not going to name names, but you know,
I'm not it would blow your mind.
The biggest guy. The guy and y'all then the suck. Guy up there.
Y'all suck. This is that information is very valid because they are very into it. Obviously, if you were very
your anonymous sourced information of an undisclosed distillery is valid information.
You don't want me to say their names. You don't want me to. I'm not saying their names. No, I'm not. I'll tell you off the record who their names
and
are.
And don't use it as your don't right, use it right, as your so argument.
Stop recording. Don't stop recording.
Yeah. No, I'm not. No, I'll do that over the phone with you and on.
Okay, so let's pretend
Greese
that
was also the worst secret keeper.
You got to be naked with no. With I'm just kidding.
I like you on no, Facebook. No, but I'm not giving you my cell phone number.
I've asked him. I said, "Why and why have y'all not gone after these people? And why hasn't the government gone out of after these people?" And it's because the answer is quite simple. They are going to go at the money is not big enough yet. It's sure. not. It's not big enough.
Also, the distillery at the end of the day doesn't care. They say they care, but they don't care.
They don't care.
No. I agree. Buffalo Trace says they care. They don't care. They make so much money off
every,
of secondary
every distillery
high.
Says they care. They don't care.
You know why they I care? Agree. You know why Buffalo Trace cares? Because back when Weller Antique 107 was 60 on secondary, it allowed them to raise the price to 50 is what it, is why they care. They care because it allows them. It shows them their buffer. When
use Heaven Hill, same thing.
Exactly, McKenna 10.
The freaking
yeah, but why? Yeah, well, yeah but the
6-year old the mind Booker's is $100.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. You know, but the thing that's confusing there is that Weller 12 still has the old freaking topper, and it also it's also less than OWA. It's less money, and it's getting way more on secondary. So that kind of puts a kink in it as far as that analogy is concerned. Well, however.
Weller 12 is the only one they haven't raised. They raised Special Reserve. No, they raised
Weller 12, but they swapped them. So here in Texas,
yeah, Weller but we're also dealing with 50, inflation. We're also dealing 40, with general 40. Economics.
But it was 30. Weller 12, and it used to be Weller 12 was the top, then OWA, then WSR, and then when they raised the price, OWA went up to 50. I think you're right, and I think Weller 12 went to like 40 or 45 somewhere in there. It's less, but they did bump both. They announced formally.
Yeah, we're talking about
that is not
logical. No, we're talking about logical increases in MSRP.
No, we're not.
Logical
increases.
OWA 2X.
No, Greese, listen to me right now. Name a product that Old Forester bumped in price because of inflation while Buffalo Trace did it.
Oh, let me tell you.
They just haven't done it yet.
No, let me tell you happening. What Old Forester did.
Old Forester's not going to sell. They've already, number one, they've already gone up on their birthday bourbon. But two, over the last few years.
It was 130 still again this year.
No.
That's an increase over the last few years, though.
That's an increase.
Oh, I paid 130 every. I paid 130 last year, too.
Last year. 3 years ago? No.
Okay, hold on. Let's keep on track. So
we're dealing. I have one point here. In 5 years, due to inflation and due to whatever the crap's going on in the freaking supply chain of our country, like those prices will go up. It's going to go up.
Sure. There's no denying that. That's fine. That's irrelevant. So going back to the Old Forester, what most brands do is they release new products at higher prices. That's how you get around. Instead of raising prices, which I've said Old Forester can do no wrong, Beam has shot themselves in the foot a countless number of times.
Right. Yep.
What Old Forester did, and same thing what Heaven Hill did, is you would rebrand and then raise the price. You take virgin bourbon and then you literally put it in new packaging. And you've got Heaven Hill 7 year for $45.
1783 is a contradiction to that.
I don't even know what 1783.
They raised the price on it and repackaged it.
What's they didn't change brand on it. They kept the same brand.
They changed the proof and they changed the packaging.
Well, they changed the proof in the bottle shape, yes.
But that's the same thing that Heaven Hill did with the bottle and bond.
Everything is different. By the way.
No, but I thought you were saying that
new products.
He was saying they created a new product and a rebrand for that.
And or, right? So you can rebrand. You do new packaging, a new look. That's one thing.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the or. Okay.
Other people, like for instance, what Buffalo Trace did is they just released about 15 new Weller products, right? Then you can charge whatever you want. Nobody feels like they got ripped off.
I have something to say to that.
I want him to keep talking because he was going to tell us about Old Forester. But
yeah, Old Forester did that. So they would release new products at new price points versus, and then you know, incremental increases. No one really scoffs at.
Right.
Old Forester still can't do no wrong. They're making all the right decisions. But let's look at that. What's a little heinous, if I'm going to shit on Old Forester for a second, is a 4-year-old single barrel pick for $80. That's a bit heinous, but people line up.
You're saying the 1910, they didn't release a 1910 barrel proof. You know what I mean? Like that. However,
the 1910 is the new product that he's correct. Referencing.
They released exactly. The Whiskey Row series.
Yeah.
You go from Old Forester standard offerings, the $20 product, and you say, no, we're going to release the Old Forester Whiskey Row series, all new products, all new SKUs, all at different price points. That's what they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just want to circle back up to the Weller thing. I know everybody, I mean, freaking Dan and Sean are butthurt about Weller. They're so butthurt about Weller.
Weller's the dumbest thing that's happened from a big brand in a long time.
We can't even walk into a store and see OWA on a shelf, but yet you're making a new label every 6 months of it and putting a new product out.
E.H. Taylor.
Yep. Yeah, Taylor's doing
it's
the same
thing. It's just a Sazerac
thing,
realistically.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Here's the deal. Y'all are about to get, oh my gosh.
We're about to get wrecked. Is that what you're about to say?
Yeah, you're about to get wrecked.
Wreck us, big boy. Let's go.
Because what have distilleries done year after year of this whiskey boom and growth? What have they done? Buffalo Trace specifically has added 200,000 barrels in their rick houses and more.
Sure. Okay.
Roses had like a $4 billion expansion. So yeah.
This is Buffalo Trace is probably the smartest distillery in this regard. And I've got no connection to Buffalo Trace, you know, like whatever.
Says the guy with a wall of E.H. Taylor behind him.
I got in early, baby. I got
an E.H. Taylor, you know, pick, you know, not a big
listen,
deal.
Listen, Grease, Buffalo Trace isn't, if you think about it, listen. It's a perspective thing, buddy, because realistically Buffalo Trace is seemingly one of the worst ever at it.
Yeah.
Because they had yes, they are. Because listen, you're
no
telling
one can
me that
fuck
Eagle,
up more than Beam, but go ahead.
You're telling me right now that Eagle Rare as a 10-year whiskey that was hyper available and everywhere, which had an old age statement on it, right? You're telling me that becomes hard to find, right? And then Buffalo Trace becomes hard to find, which is like 6 years old. Every one of their normal base offerings, some age stated, some not, has become impossible to find. And then they blame it on the fact that more people are buying whiskey than they ever have, right? So that they're so bad at predicting how the market's going to go. When Wild Turkey wasn't, when Knob Creek wasn't, when Brown Foreman wasn't, like none of the other big distilleries are having anywhere near the problems that Buffalo Trace is having right now, filling shelves and distributing alcohol across the country.
Name
right?
another brand that has like everything in their repertoire or their catalog that isn't incredible and seeks huge prices.
Now, like, I'll give you that, Grease. The Buffalo Trace. So I think we've discussed this a little before, Dan, on this show.
Yeah.
The conspiratorial nature of whether or not BT's doing this on purpose or they're just really bad. I'm a bit more conservative in that perspective. I think it's fair to say that the most popular, the one that's benefited the most on secondary, the one that's been the most consistently approachable in price on the shelf is Buffalo Trace. If they were to raise their prices like everyone else, it might be a little bit different. But you are talking about a 10-year Kentucky bourbon in a decent bottle for $30.
Yeah.
So oh, it's incredible. Real, it's,
with also I mean, incredible consistency with the flavor profile.
Correct.
They could charge $60 for that tomorrow and it would still flower.
Yeah, but the thing is the ones we're talking about right now aren't on secondary. Buffalo Trace isn't incredibly well known just for normal whiskey. Buffalo Trace is Buffalo Trace because they have the Pappy line and the BTAC line and the Mashbill 2 line.
I agree with that. However, yes, those lines are more popular.
What's amazing about
but
that?
I'm telling you right now, anytime in Tennessee that a store gets Buffalo Trace, it's gone in a day. Like correct. That is sought after.
Because they get so little.
Yeah.
That's why.
That's a distribution thing.
This is my point. There used to be Eagle Rare at a gas station for 2 years. That's 4 miles from my house. And you can't find it anywhere anymore. And they say, we can't get it. It's become allocated. Early Times Bottled and Bond purchased by Sazerac has become allocated. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can't tell me that they're like it's because they're the most sought after. They're not the most sought after because of they didn't market the hell out of everything they do. Right now they age barrels incredibly well. Mm-hmm. They distill incredibly well. Like they are one of the best ones at it. The problem comes in with you're telling me that Eagle Rare was 10 years in everywhere on every shelf in every liquor store in the whole country, but Old Rip 10, there were 8,000 bottles a year, same exact age statement, a slightly different mash bill, but Weller 12 used to be everywhere too. And that's older, same mash. There's no way in hell that Buffalo Trace is like this incredible at it when they can't keep a single bottle on any shelf anywhere in the country.
Dan's fired up.
You know why they can't? Because it's supply and demand. Do you think that Buffalo Trace is literally sitting on these bottles and not releasing them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the part I'm out.
Oh,
I'm out.
That's so I Michigan of you.
You're forcing me to sign like with Grease
only,
on this.
The only good thing about dirty. Michigan is you can buy bourbon in a gas station.
It makes mm-hmm. people greasy.
Yeah. Do you think over the past 5 years that the whiskey industry has not grown as far as consumers, people getting
100%
in the
has. Why has not one other distillery had the same problem?
Because of the price
I think there's point. A lot of factors.
Yeah. I think that Buffalo Trace has built a loyal following, a very consistent profile, solid products at a crazy, stupid price. When everyone else has been paying attention to secondary, Buffalo Trace has said, no, we're going to keep this train going. You'll see incremental growth. But I don't think it's because they're purposely holding product back. And to me, that seems crazy. Because if I remember correctly, they're building a Rick House every quarter, every couple of months.
$1 trillion
expansion. That's fine. That's why I say it's one of the two things. They're either the worst ever at seeing how market growth was going to go and didn't plan for it, or they're creating hype by holding. Listen,
Knob Creek wasn't prepared for it.
Knob Creek was doing 15-year store pick for 8 years in a row.
Well, exactly, because
they had overestimated.
They could not get rid of it.
Yeah. Right. They're equally as bad at that. That means they're correct. Really bad at profits.
In our favor.
That they're having to shove that out at $49.
They fixed it, right? Yeah. So they raised the price to $60 store picks, and all those store picks are around 10 years now.
Yeah.
They're releasing a 15-year, 100 proof. So their Beam's fixing it. They fall ass backwards into success. And
but also you look at something like Maker's Mark that years ago, I think it was 2014 or 15 when they were saying we're going to have a shortage and they only make one product. Now it's a Beam Suntory company, obviously, but they only make at the time, I think they only had that and Maker's 46. So two products, same mash bill, same aging. Just one had some barrel finished staves. They were like, we're going to run out of whiskey because there's this bourbon boom coming. So we're going to dilute our whiskey more.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that soured people that were already in they used another to have much higher stature, but they said, we're going to go out and we're going to dilute it down to 86 proof. And so people stopped buying Maker's Mark.
Wasn't it 87? I thought it was like 3 proof. It might have been 86. It might be. It's 3 or 4 proof. We're talking 1.5 to 2%.
But so that's another bad move. Instead of saying we're going to keep the same price point and same consistent whiskey and just we're sold out everywhere. Like,
let me go.
I don't think anyone did this particularly well, just because everyone's into it now and you can find something on a shelf may mean that they did it kind of poorly because we don't know how much the backlog they have, like Beam when they were having to shove out the Knob Creeks, but also at the same time, we're taking age statements off their regular.
Right.
I don't think anyone could really predict how big bourbon got. And especially like when you're talking about a 15-year. Yeah.
It's almost like we already had a divisional shift in this.
Yeah. No one knew what was coming.
The divisional shift came 5 years ago, bro.
Exactly.
The secondary market.
It's happening right now because here's the deal.
Lord have mercy.
And it, no, it's look at Weller right now. I'm coming back to Weller real quick, Sean, and I want you to get back to it. Buffalo Trace, number one, is genius. Okay. Number two,
at marketing,
he's
only,
really trying to get that.
Only at marketing. Yes.
No. And aging. No. Do you know who's going to make the most money and still be standing at the end of this when all of this extra product, not necessarily, when all of this extra floods the market? You have Weller 12 being aged up to potentially to Pappy in some regards. You have Weller Special Reserve, OWA, and Weller Foolproof being aged up to 12-year right now is an option. And you have so that's why it's less. You have, as of 5-6 years ago, they really started pumping. In the last 3 years, they've started adding a ton of Rittkowski.
Wait, hold on. When you say why it's less, what do you mean it's less than what?
It's less because they're holding on to it.
Less product on the market.
Oh, okay.
Less product on the market because they're aging it up to supply. They are.
Is that why there was no George C. Stagg this year?
It's an anomaly. I have no idea. I'm not
because they're so good at all of this.
No, they didn't put out a crappy
product.
Can we go back to the assertion
that they're the best at marketing? I disagree completely.
Hang on.
Lands is the best marketed bottle of whiskey ever. What period.
Let me finish on this point really quick with this Weller illustration and then we can move on. Y'all can talk about whatever you want. Because of that, because of that growth and that shift in product that's already developed, you saw less of that product, right? And what also pissed you off, you saw Foolproof come in, then you saw the single barrel come in.
CYPB.
They're insanely smart. Do you know what is easy to replace? Those 6 to 8 year products. That's the lowest on the totem pole. Foolproof. When you go and pick a bottle of OWA Foolproof and Weller Special Reserve, you get to pick what proof you want that in. Retailers see a benefit in 107 because it'll yield more. They can probably get the same amount of money because of the way it's structured, or however they could pick Weller Special Reserve. They want to sell it at a premium. It's a store pick Weller Special Reserve. There's not a lot of those out there. Like this retailer can pick that. The 6 to 8 year old product is the easiest for Buffalo Trace to pick up on. So they diversified that product with single barrel, with CYPB, with Foolproof. Those are all added recently because that 6 to 8 year product is eventually going to come and meet the demand. And Buffalo Trace decided to offer those more analysis because here's the deal. Let me ask you this. If you love OWA, if you love all Weller products, and let's just say it's Weller Special Reserve, OWA, and Weller 12, what has been the staples for a long time, and all of a sudden they're available, okay? I'm going to buy a case of each, right? Because they're available. They're there. You add three more options to that are readily available. There's no way you don't buy a case of CYPB.
None of them are readily available. That's the issue. That's why it's $200.
But it's not here, Grease. This is why it doesn't matter that it's coming.
So Grease, is the divisional shift more whiskey? I'm confused.
Grease, they launched three labels when they can't fulfill their damn orders on labels they already have.
Exactly.
Hey, because we only have 30 beans for the whole family and we might all die. You know what we should do? Let's just spread them out and die later, dude. It's the dumbest shit in the whole world. Dan, I swear to God.
Dan, you are analyzing right now versus 5 years from now.
Reason, I'm analyzing the last 3 years of whiskey. Antique 107, Weller 12, and Foolproof haven't been available for 3 years, right? They launched three new labels during the unavailability of their staple whiskeys. That doesn't make any sense.
I landed an OWA store pick today, Dan.
I hate you, Grease.
We're driving to Tennessee right now.
Literally today.
All right. So
I actually have two of them.
I agree with Dan that it doesn't make any sense to release more SKUs of items if you can't fulfill current orders. That frustration's valid. It's a good point.
Chris, if you've got the inside baseball information of how much product you've got and you've got it slated, you're establishing right now a FOMO.
That's the point. Yeah, exactly.
It's really pushing those prices up.
Why does Grease always end up like?
It's genius. It's
Grease is like, arguing against himself.
He always argues for the other person's point. When you said they're not holding things back for scarcity, and then he's like, "No, they're not. Here's exactly why they are."
That's exactly it. So,
no. I said they're not holding it back for scarcity. They diversified prematurely, which you're pissed about. I'm saying the premature. I'm saying the premature diversity is actually going to play into their favor because you take away people knowing and FOMOing out on CYPB, Weller 12, all these things. You got them FOMOing.
Right. Okay. So here's the
when they actually have a ton of product of it, everybody's going to buy it. They're going to make millions.
So here's the thing. This is why I'm skeptical of holding things back. Because I think that if you were to double the amount of available liquid of current SKUs, even before the new release of the single barrel, the full proof, all those things, we'd be in the same boat. So this idea that they're genius at marketing, I disagree with. It's like if, look, every one of us remembers, I hope you guys would remember when Boone County or OKI or any of these MGP producers were releasing double digit age stated MGP products for $50 and it was readily available. It was awesome. And it wasn't until Kentucky became so scarce that all of a sudden MGP saw the benefits of that.
MGP used to be something people would scoff at and be like, oh, don't buy regular Bullet.
It's not because Kentucky.
It was 10-year MGP whiskey. They're just relabeling it. That was Chris, a negative.
Chris, that was a great point.
Chris,
I can almost see where you're saying that. However, because they released it early, a single barrel 100 proof Weller, 100 proof single barrel Weller will fly off the shelf before a antique 107 store pick every freaking time. Look at secondary price evaluations.
So I agree. I think that these items. Okay, so it's a point.
Tell me that the secondary.
I'll tell you if you let me talk. All right, here we go. So there's a point of diminishing returns. I am not denying that your FOMO argument is real. It is real. It is. Every time there's a new Weller product, people lose their minds. I remember when CYPB released, it was going for like $800 for a fucking bottle. And again, I hit my children because of it. So the argument that 107 will fly off faster, I disagree. Because whether it flies off 1,000 miles an hour or 10,000 miles an hour, at a certain point, it's gone in an instant. And everybody who's been around for the last 5 years remembers Ed Bly. Ed Bly from Cork and Bottle. I remember bragging that we released a single barrel in HBS in 2016 that flew off the shelf in 27 minutes. It was a local Texas producer. 27 minutes, and only because the distiller hand signed each bottle. Ed Bly goes, "Hey man, that's cute, but listen, hold my beer. I released 3 barrels of OWA at once and sold out in 1 minute, all of it. People lined up around the block the night before. Is there a high secondary value of OWA? If it's a store pick, in some cases, but at a certain point, it's gone, it's gone.
That's a great point. They're both going to fly off the shelf.
To do what they did. I agree completely. It was stupid. They're not even.
But they didn't know that necessarily.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like
where's the app?
Grease. You're telling me Buffalo Trace doesn't know when they drop a Weller or E.H. Taylor or Pappy or BTAC, they don't know that it's going to sell. We're pretending this right now.
They didn't have to diversify the line in any way, shape, or form to make OWA fly off the shelves.
This is why I feel like Sazerac is not that good at marketing. They have no idea what they're doing. I think what happened was they dug their roots so deep into the bourbon culture so early on at such a great price and they're so consistent. Double digit statement again, 10-year-old Eagle Rare for $30. But I get. I'm sure you guys are. You guys on the press list? Any of you guys on the press list for Buffalo Trace things?
Yeah.
They still submit bottles to awards competitions. I get a fucking notice that Wheatley Vodka and George T. Stagg won a double gold or double platinum at some stupid award ceremony that Fred Minnick's run. You know, I'm just kidding. I love Fred. And that there's no need for that. What's the purpose? And then the one time they actually spent money on marketing. A little side note. For the last 7 years at my whiskey event, Buffalo Trace hasn't paid for a table. I offer them to come and I supply all the good stuff. Throughout the year, we collect the store picks and the Blanton's gold and straight from the barrel. And we provide it for their table, but we get to save Buffalo Traces at our event. So we get to win the taters over. They never pay for the table. And the first time I ever actually saw them spend money on marketing, like really spend money on marketing, was Joe Rogan. And they fired Chris Comstock. They fired the guy that made that decision because they're like, we don't spend money on podcasts and Joe Rogan's not cheap. So I don't really buy that they're geniuses at marketing. I think that they dug their – and Blanton's is iconic. Just look at it. There's no – they don't spend money promoting Blanton's.
No. But marketing can be like the bottle shape, the packaging, the dates, right? Sure. So when I say
– I also think that there's a little bit of difference because we think of Buffalo Trace as Buffalo Trace and we think of these brands as these brands, but none of them are their own – mom and pop shop. These are giant companies. It's Sazerac at large that makes a lot of those decisions. It's
right.
Beam Suntory. It's Brown Foreman. Sure. Like it's not. And so once you get into a monstrosity and have the tentacles of a bureaucracy within a large corporation, then I agree with you. I think that marketing in general starts to suffer because then you have someone that's not on site at the distillery making the decisions. You have someone in New York or in San Francisco that's making decisions.
Louisiana, yeah.
Based on Louisiana, making these decisions based off of what their fancy marketing master's degree that they have from an Ivy League school like is telling them to do, not what is on the ground at the distillery, even though the distilleries are very much still being run like a family environment that we see at a lot of these. That's why we love absolutely the folksiness of them.
The so worst thing I do about agree Buffalo with you, Trace Chris, is Sazerac.
That I don't think that it's necessarily Buffalo Trace is bad at marketing. I think it's any giant corporation doesn't understand the like down home nature of the industry.
Yeah,
which is weird, but they don't get what they're selling is a very Americana apple pie product, and they're still trying to market it as some Italian sports car, and it's not. There's a difference there.
Chris and Will, I agree. Sazerac is the problem.
We accept your defeat.
Sazerac is the problem. Buffalo Trace.
I think store owners were the problem.
Yeah, Grease.
No, the secondary mark is the problem.
Grease has a problem with
the
everybody.
The store owners are best positioned to raise everything to secondary prices and get these little bitty pieces of crap out there that keep flipping bottles that don't have, you know, they only see, holy crap, I can make $150, you know, off this bottle. I'm going to get it. And like, if you decrease the amount of money they can make, or if there's a high risk involved, I'm not even getting it.
I thought we already disproved that because you're alienating the people that come and make your business work. And that's the reason you're getting those picks. And if you start doing that, then you no longer have that business that they're buying, you know, seltzers, they're buying water, they're buying vodka, they're buying everything from your store. If you do that, they don't come back. So there's no way it'll happen.
No, I'm talking about whiskey flippers. Whiskey flippers ain't going. Well, they might actually go in there and get seltzer. You know what, Sean? You might have a great point. That's the only good point you've had.
That was Chris's point like an hour ago.
We already talked about
mine this, 3 weeks ago on our show.
Yeah.
Sean was just saying what Chris told you.
I don't listen to anybody but Sean.
Can we distract? Because Grease is here for the distraction portion. But can we go back to the discussion about ethics? We got distracted there. I do think that you're right in that some government organizations may decide to prosecute. That's not going to stop this. It's already happened. It's not slowed anything down. It's already. So the whole point of like, oh, it's illegal and it may ruin your life. Again, it's like weed. Prohibition doesn't work. It's not going to stop it. Teenagers are going to have sex. People are going to do drugs. You're not going to stop it.
But I mean, I think that
you're saying a mob doesn't obey the law. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm saying, that those are obvious statements, but that doesn't necessarily, if you get into an ethical discussion is it ethical if you have a family and you're trying to provide for them, but you could get a felony? Like, yeah, there's well, an ethical dilemma there.
But that has nothing to do with the conversation at hand. The idea that it may get to a point that it may ruin your life is not what we're really discussing. The discussion around on your episode, go back and re-listen if you have the patience and the temperament. Go back and listen to it. And at some point, Grease says, not only is it illegal, but it's unethical. And I'm like, what? Just because illegal doesn't make it unethical for a store.
Unethical? No, I said it's ethical for a retailer to charge secondary. It is legal. It's legal and ethical. I didn't say illegal and unethical.
I think he's saying that the ethics shouldn't even be in it.
The ethics around a store deciding, hey, man, if I can sell my double eagle, very rare, whatever I forget what it's called. If I'm going to double eagle, it is DEVR. If I were to sell that on secondary, I can make 20 grand and I'm going to do it. That's already happened. This idea, not only has it already happened, it's not even rare. It happens all the time. People split. I know someone locally to Houston who has an agreement in place with several liquor stores that, hey, give me the bottles. I'll sell them on secondary for you so that you don't get the grief from it. But then we can split the profits. It's been happening.
Let me clarify.
That it's somehow wrong for a store to sell secondary or to sell on secondary. You pose those questions.
Oh, it's absolutely wrong for a store to sell on secondary.
Why?
Absolutely wrong.
Why?
Absolutely.
Oh, honey, tell me.
Wait, so why is it right for them to charge secondary prices, but not wrong for them to just put it on secondary themselves?
Here's the deal.
Here's the legality of it.
No, they can promote their bottles being available in store for that amount. And if they run that bottle through their store and they pay taxes on that amount on secondary, great. If they take that bottle out of inventory,
did you just say if they pay taxes on it?
Yeah.
You don't give a fuck about taxes. Come on. I don't care. Why would you care if a store owner
absolutely cares about taxes? That's a small business. And the first
about
thing
not take, paying them, not about paying them.
Exactly right.
Every one of us is trying to reduce our tax obligation.
He's been not paying it since 2013.
Exactly. And you know what the IRS pays attention to when you don't pay your taxes? If I'm a store owner and I take a bottle of Pappy 23 out of my inventory and sell it on secondary, I'm not paying taxes on that. I paid taxes on my cost.
Why are you not reporting your income?
You should, but I don't think they do.
Sell it to themselves at retail and then go and list it? And then the taxes are paid. You see it come out of your inventory and then you just sell it and flip it personally.
Well, Chris is saying that already happened.
Yeah, this that definitely happens. That I'm
right.
Just
that's why the divisional shift is coming.
No, those store owners will go to jail and lose their license eventually. Yeah. It will eventually happen.
You got to get caught.
Who cares? You got to get caught first. That this idea, this is what I'm saying, is like you're making a point.
I'm just saying the risk of that, like you losing your license
their
to
decision.
Sell liquor and your
it's their decision.
Oh, absolutely, it's their decision. I'm not saying they can't make that decision
Why are you bringing it up as a point in an argument over whether or not they should or shouldn't do something? It's like me telling you, hey man, I'm going to make a series of five posts in which I'm going to say that speeding is wrong because you'll get a ticket. Of course it's wrong. Who gives a shit? Like, why is it even part of the conversation of, hey man, if store owners, they could lose their license. It could ruin their life.
But you're equating something that doesn't pertain to their livelihood. Like
if a commercial driver's license guy
speeds multiple times and gets their license revoked. Yeah, that's an issue. Not a normal consumer going and getting a freaking speeding ticket. That's a non-issue.
But okay. I'm good at translating for Grease. What what he's asking you, Grease, is that he's basically saying this stuff's already happening. One, so that's in. He's saying that means that's not a divisional shift. Stop talking. He's also saying it's not going to be so widespread that every single store owner is considering doing that. It's going to be individual decisions that people are making. So he's saying at the end of the day, one, either you're throwing this on your friends, saying my friends are going to be making this and I don't trust them to be, I built a relationship, but I don't trust my friends to have this alleged loyalty over their business to you. So he's saying, why do you care? Why? Why? Who cares if someone's made? Because you do business with companies that make unethical choices every single day.
Why do
big corporations, small corporations
that don't hurt anyone? Wait, it's so not really hurting anyone, right? I mean, when I have friends on Facebook that vent I have friends on Facebook that vent about Elon Musk not paying taxes, my first question is, why do you care? Even if he was paying taxes, you have no say so over how that money is spent. It's like you're trying to hold them accountable for what? Just to fuck the billionaire? Like, who cares? Worry about yourself. Worry about reducing your tax obligation.
No, it is a problem for me. It is a problem for me because that retailer has access to that bottle at the cheapest possible point. Okay. And he takes that bottle, he sells it at secondary.
Do you feel like they haven't earned that right though?
It does affect us being able to get bottles, okay, that are limited releases. That's not an ethical issue. If the secondary market chilled the heck out, let's just say it was demolished by 50%. Let's just say it just backed off 50%.
Sure. Right now. Okay. Pre-COVID prices, we'll say.
Yeah. Dan and Sean,
pre-stimulus prices. Yeah.
Dan and Sean, Chris, Whiskey Neat, and the podcast right now, we would have so much more bottles in our access in order to do reviews on to produce Why? Content because well, they're more easily available. They're at a cheaper price.
That's what saying, no, they're not. Is really yes, they are. We're discussing. What we're really discussing.
You're just sour grapes.
You feel
there.
Like it's unfair to you personally. That's what this whole thing's about. It's like, hey man, it's not fair to me. I should have access to these things.
No,
you did not have more access in 2019 than you do today.
Oh, I'm sure. I disagree.
No. I'm talking about him and knowing our store owners and the relationships we have. You do not have.
Not a fair argument.
That the entire thing is the relationship with the store owner. That's what you've been arguing the entire time.
The
is
that same
they're
going
to have
bottles.
To make a choice.
Yeah, the same amount of bottles still exist. You just got to pay more.
Secondary market has done nothing to between 2019 and today to change your access to bottles.
The divisional shift you're really talking about is the number price of point. Reviewers who won't have good bottles to review.
Right, and so that's the divisional shift. You need more people on YouTube with bottles, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the divisional shift is the saturation of YouTube reviewers. I saw someone post in Bourbon the other day a review on Weller Special Reserve, and I thought that's something none of us need. Like
or that's dadgum genius.
I don't want to be mean to this person, but like, hey man, no one needs to see your review at this point. On the largest bourbon board on Facebook.
That's not true.
Of a
That's
product. Not,
dude, there's people that are just now getting into whiskey, flooding that market right
Well,
now.
Hold on.
Flooding
well,
it.
So of here's course, the thing.
That's the entire point I'm
And if
to
it's
make.
The cheapest Weller that they can get their hands on, they want to, that they saw in the store for $150.
There's 1,000 of those reviews currently available. We don't need another one.
Grease, listen, can you go ahead Grease. And pump the brakes on releasing that review of Weller Special Reserve we did yesterday?
Grease, listen.
Not release
okay, hold
that.
On.
To be cool to if Grease's that guy could just
We'd love to see a top five list. Top five Weller Special Reserve reviews you don't need to see today.
Listen, well, here's the thing. If that's a smaller channel, it's a great idea because anything with a Weller label on is going to get you views. So for discovery content, it's a great idea, number one. So I disagree with Chris in the fact that it's a bad idea. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, but I think it's actually kind of smart.
I understand why Chris thinks it's annoying. Now, here's the thing. In Grease's point, this is the first time I've said this whole time, and it will be the last time.
I love that Dan right now is about to say this, and he's holding a pen in his hand. You know his ass had to write this.
I might just stab myself with it.
I'll mute you.
Everybody commit suicide at the same time. Ready?
Hey, Dan's just showing respect, baby.
What? I'm not saying it.
Okay, I guess we're good there. Move on.
Listen, what Grease is saying is it's not fair to the general consumer that a store owner would go sell something on secondary. And it does suck for the general consumer. And that's the only person it sucks for.
I'm a general consumer.
No, denying but this it. Being no a denying it.
Don't no, you're on the media list for Buffalo Trace. You are not a general consumer, good
this
sir.
This being a Yeah, but they're not sending him like EOR 17 every year, like a bottle.
Right.
Of it,
no, right.
Right.
Listen,
but
we're not
they just bring those to the round table.
It's the same for you and us. It's the same for you and I where if we want a Four Roses 2021, we have to find said bottle.
Yes.
Right. That's the
no,
same.
No, they send me a sample, but go ahead.
You son of a bitch.
You only get a sample?
Yeah, they send you a little a box with some ribbons.
Are you fancy, dude? Okay, cool, man. Well, guess what? We have a whole bottle of it. What's up? So, anyways. We didn't pay exactly retail for it. It's a little bit expensive. But yeah. So anyways,
set this down here.
What I'm trying to say is the idea that
Wait, so then the secondary market affects your ability to review bottles? That's weird.
No, because we didn't buy bottles off secondary to review them to begin with. So that point is mute. It's a dumb point. But you're
absolutely stupid.
What I do agree with is it does suck for consumers.
Moot.
If dude, mute, moot. Who gives a shit, man? What am I, a cow now? So, anyways, if you are the consumer and your store owner sells it on secondary, it sucks for you if you could have been the person to get that bottle. I completely agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Unfair and unethical are two different things.
I completely agree. I completely agree. I think that it sucks and it's frustrating. And I understand the frustrations. I don't know. You know what else kind of sucks? A store owner getting shafted on $2,000. That kind of sucks too. So I think there's a balance. Those are the two extremes. The two extremes are every bottle goes to secondary from the store owner. And then the other extreme is the store owner sells everything for retail. Nothing gets marked up and they lost $30,000 this year in markups on secondary bottles.
You can make a fair argument that if anyone deserves the secondary cash cow of a particular bottle, it starts with the producer.
Yep.
They actually make it. They spend 10 years. They make the investment. The liquor store, they have to, a lot of times they have to buy mixed co-packs. They have to buy a bunch of Wheatley vodka just to get one bottle of Thomas H. Handy. The liquor store gets bent over. If anyone deserves, objectively, if you want to be fair, not the consumer, fuck your feelings. You just because you don't get it anymore does not mean that you deserved it to begin with.
Right.
And then the consumer who spends $10,000, $15,000, some people spend quite a bit of money with a single liquor store in a year. That person deserves it last. But if a liquor store at any point, if the Buffalo Trace decided, all right, we're going to start pricing our products at secondary, they deserve it. If the liquor store decides they're going to start pricing at secondary, it sucks. Don't get me wrong. I don't deny it. Unfair, disappointing, sure. But unethical, no. You're putting ethics on a store based on you not getting to get something to make you happy.
No, review the tape. Here's my two takes on ethics. Here's my two takes. No, I said
Billy Madison over here.
No, the store can ethically sell their product at secondary pricing. Here's the reason why I bring up ethics. In the whiskey world, you're exactly right. We've negated the legality of shipping bottles and secondary and all this other stuff because the government is not coming after us. It's not coming after us right now. Okay. In little pockets. Sure. Are they reminding us? Sure. But they're not cracking down. Okay. You want to see the government crack down on whiskey? It would suck. Okay. The store can ethically and legally sell its secondary pricing. Now, Will brought up a really great point the other day on our show. We had a second episode where we talked about retailers. He brought up the point where that's actually price fixing. And so like if all the retailers got together and say, hey guys, let's all come together. Let's all charge secondary. We'll squash the secondary market. That's price fixing. And that's
No, time out. No, you gave a very specific example that you said every retailer needs to set prices at $500 above secondary pricing. You also said they need to organize and do this. That could be considered price fixing.
God damn, right.
Yes.
Right.
Right. No, no, no. Right. So no, that's a good I had point. To clarify
the only man
before
I know
you
who can argue all sides of the same argument and three different podcasts. No,
before you attribute it to me
and create a fourth side.
What I was saying with price fixing, that's what you were arguing, and I said that would be closer to price 100%. Fixing, which is like gas stations have gotten in trouble for doing
price before. Fixing. Price fixing, business wise, unethical.
Oh,
yes, 100%. That's an ethical issue.
Wait. So how do you feel?
Hang on, 2 seconds. And my other ethics question is. The reason ethics are involved in this is because with the retailer, and you're talking about ethics in a whole different realm that I didn't even talk about ethics about. Talked about ethics.
He was talking about in the ethical situation. You're talking about in the what?
No.
Go back and re-listen to your podcast because you said ethics so many times.
I did, but I'm talking about they have an ethical fork in the road because of their stance on saying, I hate secondary. I will never charge secondary. And if they get to the point where they actually charge secondary in order to squash the secondary pricing, if they collectively come together, then the ethics of them going back on their pronounced word of saying, I hate secondary, I will never do that. That's the ethical dilemma that the retailers will see.
But that's not a divisional shift. That's already happening. People are already doing it.
Absolutely is a divisional shift because of the rate of pricing of this thing. That equation comes into play right
now. You're saying there's going to be more hypocrites in the world. Okay, cool. We're on the same page.
That's also not necessarily an ethical situation too. You're talking about specifically the liquor store owners, you know. I don't think you can, like, with a broad brush, paint every liquor store that's not currently charging a secondary price as someone who has taken this moral stance against it. And third, you said that their entire reason is to squash the pricing. I think them raising their price would be to enjoy the pricing, not to squash it. So
it's not some brilliant effort.
Because at the end of the day, they're running a business.
Right. In the second episode that we talked about, Will, I said basically they would have to do what they hate in order to really attack it straight on.
But you're throwing.
There's no way. I
don't think they're attacking it. By doing that, they're embracing it and getting the money.
Yeah, but also it's not their responsibility to do that.
No. Yeah.
This is the issue is it's not store owners' responsibility to deal with the secondary market.
You're not wrong, Dan. You're not wrong. I elevated that response because they are best positioned. Do you think the distributor is going to raise the rate? Do you think the distiller is going to raise the rate? There's too much risk. The retailer has the least amount of risk, and they have the ability as in a state. Do you not think there's probably a Facebook group of Tennessee, Michigan, and whatever state liquor store owners? Texas liquor store owners?
It's a big state.
Absolutely. Yeah. They talk. It's up there. And if if they don't talk, there's a secondary market that actually talks for them.
Yeah, but you're putting like a weird, I don't know why you're giving them the responsibility. I don't
understand. That's what I said last night.
So I don't get it.
No.
Let's add a caveat. Hold on. Let me say something.
It's not responsibility. I
think what you're arguing could be avoided through things that are already happening. Meaning, let's just pretend that prices for secondary triple over the next 3 years. We get 5 more stimuluses. Joe Biden has a stroke. Kamala comes in, gives more stimuluses, and all of us are spending it like candy. What's currently happening by the stores that are perceived as being mom and pops, good, active parts of the bourbon community. Everybody knows who they are. Everybody loves them. Is loyalty point programs. You can fight the good fight by forcing. If you want to buy a bottle of George T. Stagg at a store in Houston, hold on. I know you're excited. I could see.
I know. I can see it.
Hold on. There's a store in Houston that has a bottle of George T. Stagg. If you want that bottle, you have to get something, you have to spend in that store, which equates to about $5,000, mm-hmm. which is it's way cheaper just to go buy the George T. Stagg on secondary. Mm-hmm. So what they've done to really get the value out of their store is to encourage consumers to buy the regular shelf items to keep the cycle going.
Store
and
picks.
Once they hit $5,000 of spend, then they can buy that bottle at normal retail or maybe slightly higher. It doesn't 30%. Matter how big. I mean, that's the workaround. Not everyone has to just say, okay, I give up.
Yeah.
I'm selling everything like
crack. But that's a retailer being smart in how they address getting secondary value.
No, we're okay. It's not just smart. It's an industry norm. Yeah, lots of stores are bundling. Most stores and lots of
stores. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Total
absolutely. Line. Like Will and I are part of a bourbon club that they charge us and we get nothing for it except the opportunity of getting said bottles at retail, and we pay $200 a year.
No, we get a discount at the store. We get the lot of perks.
Yeah, I didn't realize I was having a debate with someone who clearly makes bad decisions. So my apologies.
I'm just saying,
we pay and get nothing.
We pay $200 a year, and they fuck my wife.
We get 15% off. I'm just saying, a lot of retailers with bundling, a lot of retailers with, you know, the amount of sales that you do. Or they do a bourbon club. All of those are variations of getting secondary pricing. Because the only reason that that is worth me spending that money, or if it's worth me joining a bourbon club, is because of the scarcity of allocations. That's right.
So let me ask you a question.
Another variation of secondary.
Let me ask
you a question. Tell me I'm wrong.
So you, no, you're not wrong. You just said what I said, but yeah,
you repeated him.
Yeah. So to be clear, you just listed several different ways that liquor stores everywhere can do exactly what you're saying not to do.
Right.
You're predicting there's this divisional shift that they're going to end up questioning, giving up their life and risking felonies and risking all this when there's legal workarounds to what you're predicting that's going to happen. Why would they take your prediction that could ruin their life? Why would they take that when there's 15 examples that you just listed, I just listed, of workarounds to get what they need to get to because, the end?
But we're not dealing with necessarily intelligent people, Chris. We're not dealing
with intelligent people. I know. He's on my show right now. I'm just kidding.
Oh, my gosh. No, so the divisional shift will be a crossroads of, let's just say, let's take the Bourbon Club as an example. Will and I pay $200 a year plus tax to be a part of the Bourbon Club.
You've gone over that.
If secondary evaluations continue to skyrocket, guess what's going to happen to that Bourbon Club membership? It's going to go up. Like, it's going to it might not go up in the first 3 years. It's going to go up eventually.
Or they'll scrap it and do a points program where they make sure people are spending enough money in their store.
Exactly right. And they have the ability to do that. Absolutely.
What all four of us here are saying, except you, is this has already happened. This isn't a shift. This is actually happening and has been happening for years.
And they could avoid the shift that you're predicting by doing the things that you just said. I mean, do you guys know what gaslighting is? Am I crazy? I feel like we're on the same page here.
Yeah, I think we all are. It's just he wants to use a term divisional shift as if the liquor stores are about to go from the East to the Western Conference.
Was that the word of the day on your calendar? You're negating
that an industry doesn't grow or they're not affected by a black market. They absolutely are.
No, I'm not negating it. I'm agreeing with the countless examples you just mentioned. I'm agreeing with what you said is already happening and will continue to go up. I'm not negating anything.
If you take away the secondary market, that price for that Bourbon Club does not go up. You know why? Because you're paying a premium to get a discount on a loyalty program of buying every product in that store. Every product in that store, agreed. Not the allocations that you get.
Agreed.
I don't even know what the argument is right now.
Yeah, there isn't one. Confused.
No one's arguing.
For the past 21 minutes and 11 seconds, Sean and Dan have looked so sad and defeated. Why did I agree to do the show?
I'm so lost.
I had a nice analogy like an hour ago, but I just can't even put it into words for Grease anymore.
Sean can't remember it anymore.
It was basically like, so if you go to a car dealership and you see a new car that just come out and they put a dealership markup of say $40,000 on a $40,000 car, you thinking, you know, they're trying to squash people from flipping these, or are they just trying to make a buck? When you go into a liquor store and you see George T. Stagg for $500, you don't think, you know, they're combating the secondary market. No, they're trying to make $400 extra.
You're right.
That's a great analogy, Sean.
And you know what's great about that is Sean's analogy has already happened.
Yeah.
And will continue to happen.
Yeah, but y'all are acting like 2021 is not an anomaly of economics. It absolutely is. Like y'all are Will, don't look at me like that. There are trends happening in 2021 that are unexplainable. And y'all are freaking basing all of y'all's take on the past 4 years, 2016 through 2020 or 2019 or whatever.
Wasn't 2020 like an anomaly too, though?
Yeah. Can I ask a question real quick? Sean and Dan and Will and Grease, real quick question. Has gas prices gone up in your area?
Yes,
but they'll also go down cents a gallon.
What I get,
they'll also go down, Chris.
I know, but I'm giving it to you here. Listen, I'm agreeing with you. What I'm doing now is we're all acknowledging that the economics of the U.S. has become crazy in a lot of regards. We all acknowledge. We're not ignoring it. What I'm simply saying is that your prediction isn't a prediction. It's a telling of the past. It's already happening. It will continue to happen. It'll slightly change. Things may go up a little bit here or there. The loyalty points programs may become more common. Bundling has become more common. We're admitting that all these things happen. We're not ignoring your statements that we're ignoring things is not true. We're just unimpressed because we're already familiar with it. It's
no,
been around
no,
a while.
The divisional shift that I'm talking about is the dilemma of these stores that are so passionate about not embracing secondary pricing. Will,
you're talking about two people that we know. Like, you're talking about two people.
Grease, you also put up three ways that they don't have to do secondary pricing, but can still get their money.
Ooh, yeah. One of those stores
That's exactly right. Like, they are doing –
So why would they ever shift? That's not a shift.
No,
the shift's already happened.
It hasn't happened with every store.
The stores that you're talking about that truly have made public statements against it, that have committed to giving their loyal, most loyal people, which, by the way, let's be honest, they were already doing. Every store we've always known that's loyal to us, they may not have an official program, but they know you. They see you every week.
Right.
They call you. We've got a stag. It was already happening. The stores that have made moral stances will simply institute a moral program. That's it. It'll be a loyalty points program. They may bundle some things. They'll make sure that they do what they can to prevent their most loyal customers.
Yeah, but I'm here to say that bundling and Bourbon Club, like, that's a variation of a secondary market. Now, you can do those things well.
Are you okay with that?
You can do those things well.
Ooh, good
How
question,
I would
Dan.
Say you would do it well is that you Ask meet people meet with a bourbon store pick bundle, not a freaking Wheatley vodka bundle. You can meet them with a Bourbon Club where
you're
you get
about
a
specific preferences.
That's all I have to go on, Will.
You're trying to belabor a point that everyone's already made here and agreed with you on. We're just saying it's already happened and it's not happening in the future because it's already happening. That's the only thing we're arguing over.
But
But all you're talking about is nuances to a store's choice of how to cater to their clientele.
Bingo.
That's it. There's no shift. It's just business shifts.
The most conscious of store owners will find a way to get their nut. That's not graphic, is it? Can you say that online? Yeah, that doesn't mean
it's your show.
You said you hate your kids like sexual. Five times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All
right. That's not true. I know a store right now.
Yeah, yeah.
That does not.
It's not true.
The plural of anecdote is not data, said Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, you can't Americans.
You can't say I know a store owner and say that applies to everyone. What you're doing is proving what I said, that store owners are going to make their own decisions and have been doing that and will continue to do that.
Hold on, Grease. Just a sec.
I have a dinner to get to.
Your data is
same.
Just
we're an hour and a half in.
Hey, Grease. Really quick, Grease. This idea that, like, they're going to have to make this decision, basically, which I think is what you're still arguing, right, is not a lot of stores have had to, and in the future they will have to, is what you're saying, probably.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so that's
people
fine.
People that are very passionate.
Or they don't have to.
Grease, just a second.
You hush.
Listen, don't you think that that's just an evolution of the business that they're in?
Ooh. Yes. Great point.
No,
you think
I agree.
Right. Do you think Nike used to make shoes and then thought, we'll make the exact same shoe for the rest of our company's life, and it'll work great, man. I'm sure we never have to change it. Right. Well, they probably changed basically everything since they started making shoes. They're hyper successful. It's just they didn't make a divisional shift. They evolved as a business and they're successful, right? Every liquor store owner just has to evolve with the times to be successful, right? You've literally given them ways, and some stores, like you said, have done this, but you have mentioned three good ways legally for them to get their money and offer whiskey to their regulars. It's not a shift. It's an evolution. It's not even a big deal.
They all go one way.
Like some liquor store owners are still like back in like the 1800s. And then some of them are in 2021 and they decided to do loyalty programs and they decided to do bourbon clubs and they decided to do bottle shares with tastings. One person at the store buys the bottle. They share it with everybody. That's just known at the store. Right. There are ways to get around these things that don't have to be like a moral, ethical stance on I don't like secondary, so my bottles cost $8 million now. Like, that doesn't have to be it.
So let me just say this. I know we've got to wrap
Dan,
up.
That's
I actually have to go.
Yeah,
I know Will's gotta go on a date.
Yeah. So let me just say this.
Dan, that's a great point.
The good news is, Dan, it is a great point. I love you. The good news is that you will get a chance to say I told you so if something weirdly crazy happens. In the meantime, we just don't buy into it yet. But
yeah, your data is just as good as my theory. And absolutely.
All right, listen. Hold on, wait. We gotta go. Listen, Will, thank you so much for this.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate it.
Cheers, guys.
I would like to say thanks to Dan, Sean, Grease, and Robin Williams Forearms. Clearly, I love you guys. I love you guys. I thought this was great. I'd love to have a we got to get together soon again with a less stressful, less ominous prediction episode.
We'll be fist thrown.
I would love to get with you guys, and I will be coming.
I'll get in a bouncy house with y'all any dadgum day. Let's go.
I will be coming to Michigan soon. Real quick, guys, give your information about your podcast. Where can people see the podcast? Where can people see the Bourbon Junkies? Let's tell people where they can find you.
Go ahead, guys.
So if you go on Instagram at The Real Grease, we're actually giving away a bottle at MSRP, no strings attached.
Oh, wow.
Of old Rip Van Winkle.
What a moral stance you took.
Yeah. Oh, I'm on a ethical mountain right now.
That's why he's casting stones right now, but go ahead.
Will. Obviously our YouTube page, youtube.com/thepodcast. We would appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it. Cheers. And Dan and Sean.
You can find us at Bourbon Junkies on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and all of the places. So,
cheers, guys.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.